This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Iconic masterpiece, plus recent music it has inspired, including three movements from Wynton Marsalis, A Fiddler's Tale. Tune in to A Different Nature Monday, March 18th for a special three-hour installment beginning at 7 p.m. KBOO is a proud media sponsor of March Music Moderne 2013. Full info on this and all events at marchmusicmoderne.org.
You are about to cross the border.
KBOO Community Radio turns 45 this year, and our first 2013 membership drive starts on the 21st. Help make reaching our $99,000 fundraising goal a little easier by offering a matching donation of at least $500 for us to use on air during the drive. Matches are really great motivators to entice our non-contributing listeners to donate, so please email membership@kboo.org if you would like to offer a match or have any questions. Or call 503-231-8032 and ask for the membership department to plan your spring drive matching gift today.
Fly the blue, white, and green, if you know what I mean. Fly it high, fly it free from the...
What would you have instead?
This is it.
Comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
And good morning, good morning. It is about 6 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning, and you are tuned to your community radio station, KBOO. You're listening to Positively Revolting. I'm your host, Ani, along with Sarah Sneath, who is sitting in again for Lynn Mullick. Thank you, Sarah. This morning, we are thrilled to have back Barbara Ford. Oh, you laugh, but we are, I swear to you. I enjoy our discussion so much. Barbara is a local activist. She's a therapist, facilitator. She's a singer. She's an artist. And she's here to help us explore some thoughts on deep ecology, a sense of belonging versus that alienation that many of us wrestle with in the modern world, and staying engaged and aware of what's happening in the world around us without succumbing. That's the word I'm looking for, succumbing to despair and cynicism. Good morning, Barbara.
Good morning. Thanks for having me back.
Absolutely. Our pleasure. So that's a pretty tall order for an hour's conversation.
Especially so early.
Right. We're sort of running over, well, we want to cover this and we want to cover that, and time is going to go fast, so let's just jump straight into things. Let's start out by giving the conversation context. What do we mean when we talk about deep ecology? What's your definition? How do you see deep ecology?
Okay, well, deep ecology is it's a movement, but it's also a philosophy. There are some people name this Arne Naess from the early 70s as sort of the father of deep ecology. That was when the term was coined, although there are many people who use the term, including my mentor, Joanna Macy. And so a deep ecology is sort of essentially looking at the place of humans on the earth and sort of redefining what has been the Western trajectory of consciousness, which is the Western trajectory being about dissociation, essentially, and a hierarchy of importance of the humanity of humans over the rest of the earth. And so it's deep ecology is an attempt to redefine our place more as interconnected and ecocentric rather than anthropocentric, human-centered. And also, along with that, including a shift in consciousness, not just sort of looking at sort of, oh, we're a part of the web of life, but, you know, really looking at our shift in consciousness about how do we really live into that understanding of our relationship, our egalitarian permaculture relationship with the world. And so there's been many iterations of a deep ecology and many offshoots and connections, including ecofeminism, which I know that we'll be talking about. But we'll be looking at, you know, essentially that idea of how do we relate to our world in a way that isn't parasitic and contribute and be, you know, essentially positive, part of the garden of life, I would guess. One sweet way of putting it.
I like that.
Yes.
You know, and to me, I absolutely agree. And I think that that web of life, it's one of those sort of cliches now, and people just sort of, it's sort of a cutesy sort of way to see things. But in fact, it can go really much, I mean, it's very deep, actually, when you start sort of peeling away the layers to see that, to see ourselves, to see all of the living systems on this planet as being very integrated.
Yes.
And to suddenly see humans as one of those living beings on this planet, not separate from, but truly a part of, shifts our relationship to each other and to everything else.
Yeah, and one of the reasons I love Joanna Macy's work so much is because she's actually got a PhD in systems theory, as well as being a deep ecologist and a Buddhist scholar. So she really brings together both the science and the spirit and the emotionality. I mean, there's a piece of it that's really related to her heart as well, that she brings that together in a beautiful way. And I actually, I've learned a lot of the systems work. I'm certainly not a scholar, and actually it's sort of my weakest part of my little work that I do, but I'm actually in a study group right now trying to deepen into the systems theory piece because I'm trying to get more and more of that understanding. For me right now, the piece that's most important, the piece that I'm exploring around this is, it's one thing to sort of understand our place in the web of life, but how do we feel into it? How do we live into it? And the way I've sort of put it in sort of spiritual terms is our understanding of our interconnectedness is sort of like revelation. It's sort of like, oh, this is, you know, when you really understand, that is a big deal, because it's like, it's a new way of seeing the world. It's seeing with new eyes. But then there's this also, this other piece that's more emotional, a little more poignant, which is, how do I choose to belong in the world? And that is more like a covenant in spiritual terms. That's like a spiritual relationship, a purposeful intention to live in the world in covenant and that belonging part. I mean, there is the fact of our belonging and the interconnectedness, but there's also this, like, how do I actually belong? How do I choose to belong? Where do I feel like I don't want to belong because the world's all messed up in some ways, or because I've incorporated cultural messages about life or my body or whatever? This is a place that I sort of find is sort of a rich soil for me to dig into right now.
Well, and it seems like it's so antithetical. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's such the upstream swim for people who, you know, in our modern American life, alienation is kind of the name of the game. We isolate from each other. We are alienated from the whole. Yeah. We, you know, we may cling to a family of origin, or we may be alienated from that as well.
Yeah.
And certainly we have a hard time as modern Americans seeing ourselves as a part of much.
Right. It's a culture of dissociation. I mean, there are reasons to be dissociated in some ways, but it's a culture of dissociation. And I think, you know, my, you know, political analysis is, you know, the powers that be want that to be. That, you know, if you're really connected into your heart and spirit, if you're really connected into your community, if you're really connected into the families and the life around you, then that is sort of goes against our whole culture of consumerism, and that goes against our whole culture of power over versus power with. And so there's some political reasons to be looking at this, as well as kind of personal, spiritual, ecological reasons. So this is a very rich and multi-layered material.
Mm-hmm. When you say that it's purposefully disassociated, it makes me kind of think of like the medicalization of death and childbirth too.
Exactly.
And how these systems have, yeah, made it so that especially women who like have traditionally performed like midwifery duties and stuff, and how with medicalization we no longer have such a strong prominence in that field.
Yeah, I mean, it can be, we can look at this in terms of that. We can look at this in terms of the monoculture of agriculture. We could look at this in terms of the professionalization of art, you know, and the commercialization of art. There's so many ways that just this dissociative culture keeps us from our soul's work in many ways and our community experience. And so this is something that... it's an interesting place to live when you're sort of looking and seeing. And many of us know this in our hearts or in our minds, or just know that, you know, we're living in a world that's not quite put together in a way that works for us. There's so much, and that's why so many people are depressed and anxious and feeling disconnected.
It is 8:15 in the morning, and we invite your calls. Jump right into the conversation with your questions or comments at 503-231-8187. I'm Ani. You are listening to Positively Revolting. We are here, Sarah and I are here with Barbara Ford, a local therapist, activist, artist, and oh so much more. And we're discussing deep ecology, ecofeminism, and every other topic we can possibly relate for the next hour. You can also please like us on Facebook. You can follow us all through the week and continue comments and conversations when you find our page at facebook.com/positivelyrevolting. You can also email us at any time, positivelyrevolting@gmail.com. And good morning. We already have Sean on the line.
Hey, good morning. Great topic.
Hi, Sean.
Hey, I was wondering if your guests had heard of a book called The Enemy of Nature by Joel Covell. I think he makes a really important point. It seems to me he attempts to link deep ecology with Marxism, and the overall point that he seems to be making is that in a consumer-based economy, you know, capitalism is utterly dependent on consumerism. You know, you take cigarette smoking, for example. Cigarette smoking would never have taken off if it hadn't been for the millions and millions of dollars invested in marketing and advertising to actually create that demand. And so if we're really serious about ecology, if we're really serious about liberating people and the planet, we have to be market abolitionists. We have to have a new abolitionist movement, much like John Brown at Harper's Ferry. We need people who will take no compromise with the capitalist system, that so long as it depends on consumerism, it has to be utterly annihilated. And so to talk about like interconnection and so forth, it worries me because it's almost like child's play for the national security state. I mean, I think one reason people are so disconnected is that it's so easy to infiltrate groups and organizations, and, you know, you had COINTELPRO and all that. And so I think, you know, people realize that we need extreme solutions here. We need, you know, Derek Jensen in Endgame just destroys the whole nonviolent argument, you know, by people like Gandhi and Martin Luther King. And so I think people are just really terrified, and, you know, that's why they're so disconnected, is that they're being pushed to the point of violence, and they know that it's child's play for the security state to, you know, intercept people. And so they're naturally just hunkered down and waiting for the chaos to break out. Thanks.
All right. Thanks very much for your call this morning. What do you think, Barbara?
I seem to remember, actually, perhaps this conversation happening on a previous call, and that's great. And Sean, I think want to thank you for your call, and I want to thank you for your passion. And, you know, there are a lot of lenses for us to look through when we evaluate the world. And yours is definitely one that's valuable and important to use. You know, there are different opinions about what needs to happen, and the fact is that all of the lenses are needed. All of the lenses, all of the viewpoints are necessary, and I may not be able to absorb or you know, act out of your lens, just as you may not feel real strongly about my lens, but the thing is that everything needs to be done, and so the people who are concerned about the parts that you're talking about are, you need to take action. You need to find what your passion is around that. And, you know, other people need to act in other ways. I mean, there are people who are, I don't know that I think Derek Jensen destroyed the value of nonviolence. I don't know that I agree with you on that. I understand where he comes from. And I was actually just looking at Deep Green Resistance last night, just thinking about this, and reading some work by Lear Keith. I just think that there's so many different pathways into being in this work, and if you understand the interconnectedness, you'll understand that emergence happens on all levels, not just one level. And systems theory also says that change happens on all levels, not just one level. So we can't all just do one thing. Honestly, I will disagree with you on that. That systems don't work that way. One change won't make something happen. There has to be multiple changes in multiple levels and in multiple arenas.
It's sort of the whole diversity of tactics argument.
Exactly.
In that, I mean, again, if we keep looking at it through the ecosystem's lens, that we'll find that, you know, saying that this is the only way to social change is a lot like monoculture.
Right. And I'm not saying that my way is the only way to social change. I'm saying this is what I'm here to talk about today. Mm-hmm. And I'm, you know, I'm not an academic. I'm, if anything, sort of a philosopher, artist person. And I work with people. So this is my particular lens. And people are welcome to bring all their lenses to this work.
We have LJ on the line. Good morning, LJ.
Hi, Annie.
Good morning, LJ.
How are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Very, very well. Thank you very much. Thank you for opening up this dialogue, honey. And good morning, Ms. Ford.
Good morning.
I'm with the Elders Caucus of Occupy, and I'm also with a study affinity group. And the book that we're reading this go-round is called What Every Environmentalist Needs to Know About Capitalism, A Citizen's Guide to Capitalism and the Environment. And it's by Fred Magdoff and John Bellamy Foster. As we all know, capitalism is an extremely exploitive economic system, which not only exploits people, it also exploits the environment, simply for the sake of accumulating more and more capitalism, more and more capital. And I think that we really have to take a good hard look at this and be open-minded and study the evils that the capitalistic system has on all of us. That's my comment.
Thank you very much, LJ.
Thank you, honey.
Yeah, thanks. And you're right. That's all true. And what I'm sort of talking about is sort of like what's the core, what comes underneath the capitalist system. Capitalism is a form of dissociation. It's dissociating from the needs of the collective to the greed of individuals. And it's a symptom. Capitalism, the kind of rampant capitalism that we're talking about, is a symptom of this culture of dissociation that I'm talking about. So I am talking about some touchy-feely stuff, but I'm also talking about real-world stuff here, the manifestations of dissociation and of this anthropocentrism that I was talking about is rampant capitalism, is corporatism, is patriarchy, is a bunch of other things that are not working for us in this world.
503-231-8187, the number to call to join us this morning, just like Brian did. Good morning, Brian. You're on the line.
Good morning. This is a great topic, and I don't think anybody should, you know, take it lightly. I'd like to point something out if I could. Last night I was listening to NPR, and I was kind of getting ready for bed. And so I can't, you know, give you names and everything, but the security person who just testified in front of Congress, who said that, you know, that our chances of getting hacked and, you know, and taking down our system through computers was more powerful than, you know, armed terrorists, you know, and he said it was just an imminent threat at any time. And there was a commentator on there, and it was admitted that he hyped this person testifying in front of Congress, and it's really not quite as bad as it could be. And my thoughts went back to the Iraq War and how we beat the drum and just lied, you know, consistently until you know, we were allowed by Congress to invade it, et cetera, et cetera. You know, and the thing is the lies don't work, and that's my point. But it does create an enormous amount of fear.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, to me, you know, American society lives on its fear. You know, that's our fuel almost, and we're all scared to death of everything. You know, and when communism died, we got terrorism. Mm-hmm. And terrorism was always waiting in the wings, but we came out front, but... That's just sort of my comment is, like, you know, we can't trust the people who are, we've given the responsibility, and we're empowering them, you know, from the police department in Portland here all the way up to Congress. We can't trust these people to be honest with us and even have our best interest in mind. So that's basically my comment.
Thanks very much, Brian.
Yeah, thanks, Brian. So you know what I'm hearing? Because I deal in like, how does this affect us? How does this affect us emotionally, spiritually? How does this affect us collectively to know this stuff? How does this affect us? I mean, because the whole piece of work that people who are activists who are, you know, coming from the deep ecological perspective is, how do you keep your eyes open and not shut down? How do you keep your heart open and still see beauty and find gratitude in the world when you know that the world is going to hell in a handbasket? I mean, this is the stuff that, you know, how are we going to live mm-hmm. knowing this stuff? And how will we treat each other knowing this stuff? And so this is the piece that's really rich for me personally, is we know, we're knowing more and more. We're connecting more and more in these interesting kind of paradoxical ways on, you know, online and learning facts. And but it isn't just about the facts. I mean, the facts are important, but how are we going to live with those facts? And how are we going to find ways to collectively and individually and collectively process and decide that we are not just going to passively accept and find a way to contribute, find a way to make meaning for our part in healing of the world, and that's in that way. And I use healing the world very specifically because there's so much to address.
Mm-hmm.
And it isn't about just fixing one thing. It's about, like, one part. And this is the part where trusting the web of life is important, because we can't all just go fix everything. You know, I can't make, you know, a miracle happen and end war. But there are pieces that each of us hold. And if we understand that we are a part of a whole, then we can, just like a plant in a permaculture garden has a particular role it serves, or a creature in the permaculture. I'm a beekeeper, so I'm like full of pollination ideas too. That, you know, bees hold a particular, they have a particular gift, they're there, and they fit in to the permaculture of the garden. We as individuals, we as people, we in a community also have that capacity. So we can respect our own work and respect the work of other people. May not be our work, but they're doing something really, really important. That's part of the larger picture of change and transformation.
And so if each person really acts on their heart and does what they feel particularly called to do,
right,
then we know that all of the work is getting done.
Right.
Without spreading ourselves, what is it Bilbo says, like so little butter over too much toast.
Exactly.
Yes.
And this is the part about living in community and finding community is, like, if I see that Bill over there is holding up the piece of sky that has to do with anti-corporatism, then I can do climate change. I can work on that piece. And this person can make the brownies for our meetings, and this person can take care of the kids, and this person can be the doctor that helps us heal our bodies when we're stressed out and that kind of thing, that we all are fitting together in a way that supports life.
Well, it gets back to the sense of belonging, because we understand that we ourselves have an important thing to do, but that we ourselves also fit into this whole, that we are called to be a part of it.
Right, and you know, the thing, even the idea of belonging has been like co-opted by the culture, because belonging in some ways has been like, you belong because you're the same, you know, like three of these things belong together on Sesame Street, you know, and the other one doesn't because it's different. Well, our belonging, ironically, depends entirely on our individual capacities and our gifts and our skills that we bring, that the world needs us to move forth with our individual gifts. And as you know, I know you've talked to Michael Mead quite a bit about this bringing your soul work into it, that, you know, the world needs all the creativity and energy that we can muster at this point in time. So we need, it's our job to find out what that is and bring it.
We have the lines loaded. Let's go ahead and talk to Sylvia. Good morning, Sylvia.
Good morning. I usually don't call in anymore because I talk so badly on the phone. But I think I need to put in my just a comment, because I'm sorry if I sound kind of shaky, but I'm going through a very difficult time because I work directly with Mother 7 days a week, and it's just in my private little world because that's the only thing I'm capable of doing. But that's also what she wants. And what I'm seeing at this point, one of the big things that's happening is the total infestation with technology. Everything is a machine. Everybody that goes in the woods, they're all plugged in whichever way possible. And the it's mind-boggling. And talk about estrangement and alienation. You got it right there. Everything is mechanistic. When I make rock people, well, and of course they come along and they destroy them because they don't mean anything. I mean, to me, the rocks are a physical manifestation of a spiritual power, but that doesn't mean anything. And then they'll ask something about if I have a website, and I say, I'm sorry, I'm allergic to technology. And, you know, they just walk away. It's totally meaningless. There's no... It's very difficult to deal with. There's the reverence, the absolute reverence to life, to the mother, to the great mother. I don't see it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. The opposite is also true, because every time you talk about something very deep, the opposite is also true.
Mm-hmm.
But this unbelievable infestation, and yeah, you talk about community and talking to other people. I used to be able to, on my one day off, so to speak, okay, I would love to go around the Hawthorne District and just talk to anybody that came along, and it was really good. I can't do that anymore because there's such an infestation with the machines, I get sick, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I go back to my rocks and the trees, and I will never forget And this happened a number of years ago. You know, I have severe encounters with the rocks and the trees and the water. I mean, really, really severe. And I will never forget when they first told me technology is not the answer. And the last thing I was thinking about at the time was technology. But they've told me that, and the trees don't lie. And the thing is, see, in order to have all the technology, you need all the extraction. You rape Mother Earth just like you rape the women. I mean, the direct connection between the physical violence to women and the violence against the Great Mother. And the other thing is, with all this technology, it's another distraction, because the technology is also the foundation of the war machine. Mm-hmm. You know? I'm sorry if I keep going on. But anyway, I just thought I'd, you know, if it weren't for my homeopath, well, it's a spiritual thing. And mm-hmm. I understand she can put a person through hell, because that's the only way, at least for me anyway, to do, I don't know, but anyway. So
Sylvia, okay. It's so good to hear from you this morning.
So, yeah. I mean, I'd love to come down the cable, but I can't do it anymore.
I understand, hon.
Yeah. Okay, thank you for listening.
Thank you for calling.
And okay. And Sylvia, I just hope you're able to listen. I just want to thank you, because there's a lot of very sensitive people who are holding a very important place in the world of reminding and holding that relationship with nature, with life, in a beautiful way. And I just want to honor also the pain that I hear, that your struggle, and you feel it very acutely. I can sense that. And one of the things that's true is it's difficult to hold that pain, and many of us do all kinds of things to avoid that. And we can't do it all the time. But there are ways and practices. I think that your connection to nature is probably what's holding you right now. And the trees, I have a relationship with trees too. That's very important. There's a place, you know, you're holding your part in the garden. You're holding your part in the permaculture of the system. And I just want to thank you for sharing what your insights were around that.
Absolutely. So Sylvia brought up some themes that are involved in ecofeminism. So mm-hmm. we might as well take the turn there. There's, for me, there's a shifting point in our history where these divisions started becoming very outspoken. The alienation from the earth, the separation of humans, and setting ourselves above the earth, not a part of, but there to study and dissect. And this, I'm going to refer to some Francis Bacon. Francis Bacon, what a guy.
What a guy.
He often wrote about our relationship to nature in rather sexualized terms, and not very nice ones, I have to say. In The Rebirth of Nature, an author, Rupert Sheldrake, writes about Bacon's work. He used metaphors derived from contemporary techniques of interrogation and torture of witches. Bacon proclaimed that nature exhibits herself more clearly under the trials and vexations of art, otherwise known as mechanical devices, than when left to herself. In the Inquisition of Truth, nature's secret, quote, holes and corners were to be entered and penetrated. Nature was to be bound into service and made a slave, also to be put in constraint. She should be dissected, and by mechanical arts and the hand of man, she should be forced out of her natural state and squeezed and molded so that human knowledge and human power can meet as one.
Let's all take a breath.
Wow. Yeah, no? Bacon. What a guy. Mm-hmm. To me, there is an essential connection between our alienation from the earth and our alienation from each other, mm-hmm. and the essential divisions along gender lines, mm-hmm. and the suppression, the identification of the planet as female, mm-hmm. and the exploitation of the planet as though it's there to be used. Mm-hmm. Very closely echoes the exploitation of women and the idea that women are here to be used. Mm-hmm. What do you think, Barbara?
I say you're right. And, you know, ecofeminism is definitely connected in with a deep ecology, and it isn't – there is a piece about the increase in authoritarianism, the power over dynamic versus the power with, and also in terms of things like valuing the intellect over the body and intuition, that's a huge piece you know, the intellect is the one that spirals out and is just, you know, not to say anything that intellect isn't, you know, I'm a smart gal, I can think of things. But to be so polarized, mm-hmm. the polarization, I think, is the core of all of this, polarization/dissociation.
Right.
And that the separation, so that there is no I-thou relationship, there is no connected relationship that allows people to forget that that when they act on another, that they're acting on the whole, that they're acting on themselves, that there is no separation. One of the beautiful quotes from John Seed, who has worked with Joanna Macy and who's part does a lot of environmental work with the Rainforest Network in Australia, is that he realized at one point that he was defending the rainforest, and then he realized, he said, I thought I was defending the rainforest, but then I realized I'm the part of the rainforest that's defending itself. And so it was that lack of separation, because, you know, I can be like, oh, look at me, I'm defending the rainforest, you know, look how cool I am, and, you know, I'm doing this thing too or for, as opposed to with.
That's an essentially deep shift.
Yes.
I mean, really.
Very deep shift. And so this is one of the things that actually holds me while I'm doing some of the work that I do, and while I'm looking at the work that other people are doing, is that they're the part of the earth that is acting out in self-defense. They're the part of the earth that's feeling the pain of the rocks. Mm-hmm. They're the part of the earth that is noting the dysfunction of the capitalist system. You know, that is something that we are all kind of striving to do. And that shift towards patriarchal power structures definitely accelerated. You know, you didn't have to have patriarchy to have anthropocentrism, but it sure accelerated
exactly
the dissociation.
So. I want to remind people you are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, your very own community radio station. Perhaps you're listening online at KBOO.FM. Mm-hmm. Maybe you have friends and family that might want to listen online. You can let them know about it, too. You can call in with your questions and comments to this program. We are here until 9 o'clock this morning. It's another 20 minutes, so call 503-231-8187. You can also like Positively Revolting on Facebook and follow conversations throughout the week. And always, you can contact us by email at positivelyrevolting@gmail.com. We've had deliveries
of notes.
We've
been getting notes.
I love that when it happens. Do you want to share your note, or
yeah, I'll share my note, and yeah, this is great because it reminds me to actually talk about my own workshop that's coming up too.
I was going to get there next.
So I received a note by a nice person. Next week is Tar Sands Action Week, and March 21st is Climate Action Day. March 22nd is World Water Day. So I wanted to mention that there's a lot of great work happening in the Pacific Northwest. I've been involved with climate activism for several years. And I'm actually doing a workshop called Active Hope, How to Face the Mess We're In Without Going Crazy on March 23rd. And half of the proceeds, I'm doing it on a gift economy basis, first time I've done that. The response has been such that I'm offering up half of the proceeds of the workshop to the Power Past Coal campaign. So, and I also want to note that gift economy is a way of making this work accessible to anybody, because we have people signed up for $1, we have people signed up for $75 and everything. Whatever you feel is right, feels right to give, that you can afford and that you can give with joy to this work and to support other people in this work. And it's called Active Hope, How to Face the Mess We're In Without Going Crazy, because that's the name of a book that my colleagues, Joanna Macy and Chris Johnstone, have written, and people seem to resonate with that. Hope is a interesting word to hold on to in these days, yes?
It is.
I'm not talking about hope as something that you have, but something that you do. And ironically, I've sort of come to the place of understanding that hope, in order to be actively hopeful, you kind of have to release yourself from expectation. It's kind of one of those paradoxical places mm-hmm. where you move forward out of love, and you move forward out of care, and you move forward out of community, rather than expecting that something's you're going to actually see results in the moment, because most change doesn't happen that way. The women who were fighting for suffrage in the late 19th century never saw it, but they were part of making it happen. And this is one of the things about seeing with new eyes and the deep ecology movement, is it incorporates sort of like this wider sense of self and a wider sense of time, that our contribution is part of a long chain mm-hmm. of energy and intention that will move things along. And so it is looking at urgency in a new way.
And so your workshop is on the 23rd.
It's on March 23rd. It's at the Friends Meeting Hall in Southeast Stark Street. And it starts at 9:30. And information about the workshop, and you can sign up for it. I ask if you can register for it. That helps me to know how many people are coming. At my workshop, at my website, which is Gaia Workshops, that's G-A-I-A, workshops.net. Growing Awareness into Action. I love the acronyms. And and so if you go to my website, there'll be a link for you to sign on to register for that workshop. And if you know people who might not be able, read the workshop, see what it says. There's a little bit of woo-woo in there, but it's a lot about just sort of how do we to come together to support each other and to support ourselves in this time, emotionally, spiritually, and otherwise.
It sounds really, really good. Let's go ahead and talk to Karen, who's been waiting patiently on the line. Good morning, Karen.
Hello.
Hello, Karen.
well, this is, you know, really a wonderful conversation and very, very timely to what's going on. I have a couple of art degrees, and I've just, over the years, kind of moved away from that, just feeling very disgusted with the patriarchy and, you know, that kind of setting. So I just sort of do things more on my own. But I did want to recommend a wonderful movie. You may be familiar with it. It's called Mind Walk.
Mm-hmm.
And I just checked on the library site. It's not available on the library, and I don't think Netflix has it, but it is on Amazon. It's called Mind Walk, and it's based on the book Web of Life. And the three characters are a philosopher, played by Liv Ullmann, she's wonderful, a politician, and a poet.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's kind of a conversational thing. It takes place in that wonderful island that's in France, Saint-Michel. And it's just a beautifully done movie. But it really shows, how one can talk about these issues with three very different people and very different backgrounds and stories and all that. And very simply, you know, they do give the example of a tree, you know, and Liv Ullmann points out, well, what do you see when you look at that tree? And then she uses that as an example of, well, it's a system, you know, every piece of that tree is important to some living entity, from the tips of the leaves down to the very roots. And, you know, and that whole system is really important. So I love it because the last word, the poet has the last word.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they've gone through all these systems and talking about it and, you know, comparison with the mechanistic age and, you know, all of this. And then finally it's the poet at the very end that says, okay, you know, all these systems, this is very important, this is great, but what it really comes down to is our human connection
mm-hmm.
and where we are with one another and how important that is. And, you know, it ties in with everything, of course, but our connection to one another is absolutely paramount to mm-hmm. us, to and to make sure that that is strong and we honor that and celebrate that. And I love that movie. I really recommend it to everyone.
Thank you very much for that suggestion, Karen. And while you were talking, I decided just to see if it might be at the huge locally owned singular video store Movie Madness, and in fact it is in VHS format in the fine arts section.
And Karen, I also just want to say, you know, that artists have a special role in this time. Artists, poets, anybody, because they're there to remind us of those kinds of connections. They're also there just to remind us of the beauty of the world, which is part of what needs to ground and hold us, because, like, what are we even worried? I mean, if we aren't even connecting to the beauty of the world, you know, why are we doing this? Why are we even thinking of this? And so artists and poets, musicians, storytellers, they're all a part of this permaculture garden in a huge way, this human permaculture garden. And I want to thank you for that, and thank you for the suggestion.
Oh, well, thank you.
All right, we have actually a couple of comments that have come in on Facebook. There's a question. Joe says that his partner wants to hear more ideas about how introverts can contribute. He says that much of the work aimed at overcoming alienation seems to be suited for extroverts, or even might target introversion because they might mistake it for that alienated, isolated sort of.
Interesting. Okay. Same. Well, I'm actually on the introverted side, so I understand what you're talking about. And when I talk about, you know, being in community, I don't mean that you have to, like, be around people all the time. introversion is really essentially about you get your primary energy from being, you know, in a quieter place, more by yourself. It's not so much that you don't like people. It's just that you get your primary energy and you kind of fuel up from this time alone. And introverts are a part of the, you know, social permaculture of our life, too. They contribute in many different ways. A lot of it has to do with, you know, how just sort of finding your way. You know, I think that you don't need to follow a path that somebody else tells you you should follow. What is it that's calling to you? Are you somebody who is an introvert who likes to write? Are you somebody, I mean, I know introvert organizers and speakers and, you know, people who do all kinds of things, but there's no rules about this. There's no rules about how you contribute. It is about finding what feels right to you. Maybe it's writing in on Facebook to ask that question, you know, like, here I am an introvert. What can I do? And live with that question for a while. See what it speaks to you. And talk to other introverts. That's not oxymoronic, to talk to other introverts.
It's really not. It's true. Anything from you? Okay, we have coming on up this morning on KABU at 9 o'clock, Bill and Marvin on Veterans Voice will be interviewing Edwin Martini about the effects of Agent Orange on the country and the people of Vietnam. At 10 o'clock, you can hear Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, what did Pope Francis I know about Argentina's dirty war, and when did he know it? Guests are liberation theologist Blaise Bonpain and dirty war survivor Miguel Perez, also journalist Robert Perry. At 11 o'clock on the Radio Zine, host Chris Andre interviews the parents of peace activist Rachel Corrie about the 10th anniversary of her killing by Israeli Defense Forces in Gaza. And at 11:30, our very own Sarah Sneath visits the Bhakti Shop, a local yoga studio where she learns about the ancient practice of kirtan, which is a call and response chanting. Thanks, KABU members, for your ongoing generous support. If you are not yet a KABU member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. Of course, starting a week from today, we will be in our spring membership drive, a fine time to join the station, but any time is a good time to support Positively Revolting and to support KBOO, your community radio station. We have just a few minutes left. Let's go ahead and squeeze Lisa in. Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning. Good morning, Ani, and good morning, Barbara. Good
morning, Lisa.
Hey, it's Lisa Miet, and I just got back from a meditation retreat up at Brighton Bush entitled Resting in the Sacred Feminine.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm signed up to go to your Active Hope workshop, Barbara. I'm so excited about it, and I'm glad to hear you talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
For me, working in activism has a lot to do with staying really connected to my heart mm-hmm. and the wisdom of the heart. And I found in working with some of the materials that you work with and that I've discovered through Joanna Macy is that working together in a community on heart issues is really important, too, because we can get really frazzled in the activist world if we don't stay centered and grounded. And so it's also a personal spiritual path for me, activism, and I wanted to hear what you had to say about that.
Thanks very much for your call, Lisa.
Oh, it's nice to hear your voice, Lisa.
Yeah.
absolutely. And I think that this idea of working from the heart is also a way of reasserting the sacred feminine. And I'm not talking about just women, but reasserting and balancing out the idea that if only, you know, action and knowing and intellect was like the only way to respond. We have to find ways to ground ourselves. We all do it in different ways. I'm right in there with you because I cannot be present to the horrors of the tar sands, for example, unless I have a way to ground my heart and to be with the land and to be with the people who are caring about the land. This is what my workshop is not about. How are we going to fix the world? That's not what it's about. We will not be discussing solutions to what's happening in the world. We will be solely talking about how do we deal with, how do we respond? How do we take care of ourselves in the face of all of this? How do we stay present without shutting down, without falling apart? That doesn't mean that we don't feel bad. We do feel bad, but we do it in a context that is functional, that is compassionate, and that is that will bring us into greater relationship with the world, not lesser.
And, oh, look at that. Still 5 minutes left. We've got one person left on hold. Let's see if we can do this thing. Harvey, good morning. You're on the air.
Hi, Lisa, and hi, Barbara. And you're absolutely right. We need a change of consciousness. And in this world, there are many people, many institutions that would divide and conquer us for their own gains. But I choose to look on the quantum level. On the quantum level, it turns out that that when you have two objects, two entangled atoms, two entangled anything, when you separate them, they're entangled. They react as one. And I feel that if our theorists are right, that there's the Big Bang, that we all came out of a single atom, mm-hmm. then we're all entangled. We're all entangled. And so I choose to see the world that is entangled rather than separate. And on the quantum level, that's what exists. So that's what I'm working on here. On the quantum level, we're all entangled, and therefore we should all work together as one, because according to physics, we are entangled. That's about it.
Yeah. And
thanks
that,
very much for your call.
That fits right into systems theory. I mean, one of the beautiful things that Joanna says is, you know, we were all born out of the Big Bang 4.5 billion years ago. And so then just know that when people ask you, who are you to say something about what's happening in the world, you say, I've been here for 4.5 billion years. I have quite a lot of authority to do that.
Nice. Well, Barbara, we just have a couple of moments. So, again, how do people get a hold of you, your work, and how do people find out more about your workshops?
Mm-hmm.
You have a couple of them actually coming up on the 23rd. There's Active Hope. And
yeah.
Later in the evening.
Later in the evening, I actually am a singer, and I've started leading circle singing, which is a form of sort of improvisational community singing that comes out of the tradition of Bobby McFerrin. I actually went back east and trained with Bobby McFerrin last year. It was so fun. And this is about coming together in joy, because that's such an important part of how we need to be with each other. Yes, we need to be with the hard things, but we also need to come in joy. And we also need to find ourselves as vessels of, you know, energy and creativity being moved through us. So that will be happening on the evening of the 23rd at the Friends Hall. So both of those events can be found at my website, GaiaWorkshops.net, G-A-I-A Workshops.net. And I'm also have that on a meetup. I have a vocal jam circle singing meetup. We do that on monthly. I do the first Tuesday in Northeast, but this is a special one because I'm bringing someone special down from Seattle to do it with me.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Oh, thank you. It was fun.
It's always good to talk with you. We will be in membership drive starting next week. Do stay listening to KBOO. I want to thank Sarah one more time for being just an amazing intern and helping out with Positively Revolting and doing other fine programs here on KBOO all on her own now. It's awesome. And thank you for listening. We'll be back again next week. Take care.
What would you have instead?
No, this is it.
There comes a time.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is 8:59. Stay tuned next for Veterans Voice. This morning, Marvin and Bill will speak with Edwin Martini about the effects of Agent Orange in Vietnam. Coming up next, right after these announcements.
KBOO Community Radio turns 45 this year, and our first 2013 membership drive starts on the 21st. Help make reaching our $99,000 fundraising goal a little easier by offering a matching donation of at least $500 for us to use on air during the drive. Matches are really great motivators to entice our non-contributing listeners to donate, so please email membership@kboo.org if you would like to offer a match or have any questions. Or call 503-231-8032 and ask for the membership department to plan your spring drive matching gift today.
KBOO Community Radio continues the broadcast of the 2013 Illahi Lecture Series on Tuesday, March 19th, when we broadcast a talk by John Stauber.
Founder of the Center of Media Democracy, John Stauber is an independent writer, organizer, and activist. He has co-authored 6 books, including the bestsellers Toxic Sludge is Good for You, Trust Us, We're Experts, and New York Times bestseller Weapons of Mass Deception. In 1993, he founded the nonprofit Center for Media and Democracy in Madison.
John will be speaking at the First Congregational Church in Portland, and KBOO will broadcast the talk live at 7 p.m., Tuesday, March 19th. More information can be found at kboo.fm/Illahi2013.
I was 17, just a teenage kid, the year that I enlisted. I can't remember why I did. My mom said I insisted. I had some strange idea then that Uncle Sam was right. Mama cried, but she signed the card, and then I went off to fight. Got off the plane in Vietnam. It didn't seem like war. With all I saw, I started to wonder what I had come there for. Some officers got drunk at night and cheated on their wives. And the peasants on the other side were just struggling for their lives. Oh, the army tried some fancy stuff to bring them to their knees, like Agent Orange defoliants to kill the brush and trees. We'd hike all day on jungle trails through clouds of poison spray, and they never told me then that it would hurt my health today. But I got the news this morning, yeah, the doctors told me so. They killed me in Vietnam, and I didn't even know. I tried hard to forget the war like everybody did. Settled down, got married, even had a couple of kids. Well, my children both had birth defects, and the doctors had their doubts. They never could understand it, but I think I figured it out. 'Cause I got the news this morning, yeah, the doctors told me so. They killed me in Vietnam, and I didn't even know. This Agent Orange from Vietnam, we carry it with us still. It stays inside for years and years before it starts to kill. You might get cancer of the liver, you might get cancer of the skin. You can file for disability, but you might not live to win. Oh, I got the news this morning, yeah, the doctors told me so. They killed me in Vietnam, and I didn't even know. Oh, the doctor said, I've got some time trying to be kind. I've never been a radical, but this has changed my mind. Oh, I'd be so proud to hear my kids say, hell no, I won't go. Because you killed my dad in Vietnam, and he didn't even know. Yes, I'd be so proud.